Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I'm the mother of three children, and I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm reaching out to regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. We aren't so different, you and I. And with a little grace, we can do this. Sarah Spurlock is a mother of a 10-year-old boy, a family and marriage therapist, the owner of a multi-therapist counseling business, the wife of a pastor, and a longtime friend of mine. Sarah and I met through the adoption process over 10 years ago. Sarah's the kind of person that I would describe as being a bulldog. She doesn't take no for an answer, and that comes especially with her child and anybody she cares for. We could all benefit from becoming a little more like Sarah. Listen up.
Hello.
Okay. All right, Sarah.
Yes.
Hey, why don't you tell me about your family?
So Justin and I, my husband, Justin and I, we've been married for going on 21 years now. And we have a 9.5-year-old son that we adopted about 8.5 years ago. He was right at 12 months when we adopted him. And so we were married for about 12 years before Kaysen came into our life. And it's the three of us. And we have a cat and a dog. And we live in the suburbs. My elderly parents just moved from Indiana to Colorado 2 months ago. So that's been a big transition because we have not lived in the state with family the whole time we've been married. So, and then Justin's family's moving back to Colorado this month as well. So we will go from having no extended family to all of our extended family almost with us. So it will be a fun transition.
So one thing about you and Justin that I really admire, like you guys are powerhouses, first of all. Just, I mean, you especially run the family. Don't tell Justin I said that because I work for him. But
he willingly lets me run it. He would be fully okay with
it. I think he's a little afraid of you. It's fine. but you guys are such powerhouses in that. You especially, when you make a decision, you're very thoughtful about it. And once you've made the decision, you're like, no, this is what we're doing. And I think that the way that you've parented too, the way I see you parent, and it's not been an easy process for you or, you know, your family to go through, but you find every piece of information you need to find, and then you follow through on it. And, you know, maybe we take this conversation that direction in, how have you learned to, first of all, run your own business and make sure that your son gets every piece that he needs to be a healthy kid? Like, how have you made all of that work?
It's a lot. I'm tired, but we make it work. No. So yes, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I own a group counseling practice. So that's running the business, seeing clients. That's a lot of what I do. Obviously, it keeps me busy. And Kaysen has some special needs. Like he is gifted, twice exceptional, very bright, maybe a little socially and emotionally behind, but like intellectually advanced. And so one moment it can be like talking to, he might regress a little bit. Like it can be talking to a toddlerish. And then the next moment it can be like talking to an adult. Like he's very rarely like in the zone of your average 9-year-old little boy, you know, it's kind of one or the other. So he keeps us on our toes. We're constantly having to, you know, navigate resources for him and do all that kind of stuff. But I mean, one is I've always just been a person of action. Like I'm not just a person of talk, you know? So I think in my business, obviously you as a friend and, you know, the way I parent very much like, I will either say, if this is not a viable, like actionable thing, we're just going to move on, you know, or I don't take no for an answer. If it's viable and it's going to happen and it needs to happen, we make it happen. And I am known for forging a path forward.
Forging with whatever tools necessary.
It's true. No is not in my vocabulary. If there's a will, there's a way, so to speak. No, I'm an advocate, you know, whether it's with my clients or with my child, or even friends and family members, I'm definitely an advocate. and like to be that trailblazer. And so that's just kind of how I always have. I mean, my parents would have described me that way as a little tiny 8-year-old. So I think it started around then, and have always sort of been that way. Part of it is just out of necessity, and I am really busy. So it's like, you got to keep moving and like get stuff done. And part of it is just, I like to see like progress happen. You know, I like to see positive things happen and not just get talked about. So that's fair. I suppose I am known for that.
Yeah. You're definitely a trailblazer. If I need to get something done, we call Sarah.
And I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to do it. Yeah.
How would you advise other parents to be advocates for their kids? Because you really go above and beyond to find the right people for your son and yourself and for your needs. How would you tell other parents to do that? Is it just a don't ever give up? You just keep calling? How do you do it?
I think a lot of it is information. Like, I think a lot of times people are scared to find out information because then they think they're like committing to it, or they think they don't know what to do with it. And I go, you want to collect all the information and then make a decision. So knowledge is power. The more information, the better. So that's how I approach things, is talk to this person, call that person, read this. You know, anyone who, obviously, if people have participated in things you're looking into, you know, I'm a big fan of, hey, talk to them. Like, what's their experience been like? Like, what was their process like? And sometimes I think people are nervous to do that because, again, they feel like it's going to look exactly the same for them, or they're going to be committing to this thing. And it's like, no, we're just collecting information and learning and then seeing how it fits and what direction to go in. You know, what's the, so I'm definitely like a knowledge is power, collect the information and then go from there. So I'm willing to talk to anybody, you know, make the calls, reach out, read whatever I need to, and then go from there.
What are some examples of times that you've done that, either for your business, your family, your son? What, can you give an example of that?
I'd say one for my business is I'm a therapist. So my degree is in therapy. My degree is not in business. So having to learn and as I went along the path, you know, of growing the business and just taking it step by step, I constantly had to like talk to other people who are doing it, reach out. And that's always a process of like, I don't have to do it their way. I can do it this way, but I can learn from them. And, you know, and the more information, the better. I'm always learning in that regard too. So because my background isn't in business, like I'm having to rely upon all those resources and other stuff. And then at the same time, having the confidence to trust myself and trust my gut. Like, I think a lot of times trusting your gut and going, doing what fits well for you is super important. So I think that's a huge piece of it. Then with Kaysen, I mean, whenever you have an adopted child, much less a child with special needs, like everything looks different. So you have to be okay with knowing that it's going to look different and what they need, you know, and looking into that. So I think I've been lucky in that I am in the mental health profession. So being able to have resources for a special needs child essentially has been more accessible. So being able to navigate that and know what direction to go in for him and utilize those things, like I think his story would probably look different if I wasn't, you know, didn't have that kind of background and those resources that I know how to navigate and utilize. And that's part of why he was, I mean, placed with us, was they specifically said, we want someone who's going to have an only child, where he's going to be the only child in the house, and someone who has a background with mental health and counseling and things of that nature. So, now that he's a little bit older, it's like coming into play. You know, we're seeing it come to fruition, and it's kind of interesting. You know, like when he's first place with us, you're not thinking about that. You're thinking about like bottles and diapers and
right.
cute little baby in front of you, right? You know, and now that he's like a boy, his own person and personality, and getting older and can advocate for himself, and all those things are starting to play out many years later. So it's kind of interesting that that process right now is beginning. And I have very much a picture in my mind of like the next 9-10 years, you know, as he's a teenager, and what that will look like. Because before, I don't know that I had that picture. And now I'm like, I'm getting a picture of that.
Yeah. You know, I think when you go through all that adoption training, you're like, this is all so scary. I just want a cute little baby. And I feel like as adoptive parents, and as all parents, there should be required training throughout your parenting experience. Yeah. Because I feel like, especially our boys are the same age, those 9-year-olds, and you know, regardless of Kaysen's extra stuff, he's still a 9-year-old boy, and he still has all those things too that I'm dealing with. And I didn't get any training for this. They said this might happen. You should look out for that. Go find some resources. Where are the resources at? Is there diagrams somewhere? Do you have like a brochure or something? There's no brochure. You know, like you have, because you're in the mental health industry, I have reached out to you and multiple times because you do know which direction to turn. And, you know, how do you even tell people where to go? How do you tell people how to find those resources? You are a bulldog and you don't stop until you find what you think you need. For instance, why don't you tell the story about how you got Kaysen?
I mean, it's like, where does that begin? So we were in the domestic infant adoption process, and then whole other story of how, you know, the beginning part of that process. But as we had our home study done, as we're going through that, we see a post on Facebook of all places that there was the adoption exchange. It has a new name now, and I'm going to have to look that up. It's like raising. They changed the name of it. I'm going to have to look it up.
I know they changed. I can look it up.
You keep adoption talking. Exchange. But it was posted on there, and someone said, "Hey, aren't you looking to adopt?" And I realized he was in the same county that I was in, or right nearby. And made a phone call, and 3 weeks later, he was placed with us.
So and you were looking for domestic infant, but this was a 1-year-old in the foster system.
Yes. In the foster care system in Colorado, other states may be different, but in Colorado, they cannot place a child permanently until they're 12 months. But they knew about when he was 9 months that they parental rights, biological parental rights were going to be terminated. And so they started looking, and it, you know, for once he hit 12 months, a permanent placement. So that's why they waited till that time. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because he has no memory before us, obviously. Like he wasn't, I think 2 weeks after he was placed with us were like, he started walking and talking. Like he had his first steps, his first words, within a month after being with us. So it was pre all of it. You know what I mean? Anything pre that, he doesn't really have a memory of.
Yeah. And adoption exchange is called Raise the Future now.
There it is. I knew Raise was in there.
And that is actually a really fantastic resource for adoptive families, even outside of Colorado. It gives other like adoptive resources and where to go. And I honestly, if we're talking about resources too, Shatra, she has a list of resources that will blow any other website out of the water. Like it's Grow Beyond Words is what it is. And she's got phenomenal resources, links, all the states, all the therapists, all the everything that are qualified. So that's
She's very well connected because she is an adoptee and an adoptive parent as well. So she's coming from every angle. Yeah. And Race the Future. So they are, the children on their website are known for, or their parental rights are already, they're available for adoption. Parental rights have already been terminated. So a lot of times it is special needs children. A lot of times it's sibling groups or older children. But there is a wide, vast majority of children in need on there, you know, that you can choose from, that need homes and that could be a good fit for your family, you know? So it's a great resource to go to and say, hey, can I help these children in need? A lot of times, people write that option off because it's not domestic infant, or they're afraid of medical or mental health needs, or older children, sibling group, all that, you know, can be intimidating because they obviously have a background, right? They're coming into that process with their background. But for us, it was a really great fit. And I would definitely encourage people to use that resource. We were coming from a failed domestic infant adoption. We actually traveled out of state to be placed with a child. We met the birth mother at the hospital, and we'd been in contact with her for several months, and plan was obviously to place child with us. And then she decided to parent when we were at the hospital, which was obviously very difficult for us, but well within her rights. And so as we were traveling back from out of state is when we saw the post for KSIM through the adoption exchange. So the timing was kind of unique because there was a lot going on. And then we actually came to see you guys, your family, right after that, as all that was like unfolding on the drive and whatnot. So yeah, it was
that was Super Bowl Sunday, 2013.
It was
14. 2014, Super Bowl Sunday.
Super Bowl. Yeah.
I remember then like 2 weeks later you had a kid. I was like, yeah. Honestly, I thought you just wanted a child that was older than mine. And that's why you just went that direction.
They needed to be the same age.
Right. We need children to be the same age so we could stay friends.
Yes.
So I appreciate all the work you went through to make sure that we maintained our friendship.
It was tough.
Do what you gotta do. No, I remember those first few weeks, you know, we were all prepped to get a newborn.
Yeah.
And you got a one-year-old.
Yes.
You jumped in it.
We did.
Yeah.
It, honestly, what was interesting was, I don't know that we, like, I'm such a communicator that I think it was easier for, well, so is my husband. So I think it was easier for us to have a child that already could kind of communicate, you know what I mean, his needs, so to speak, or like that infancy stage we sort of skipped out on or messed out on. But I don't know that we fully felt like we, like there was a difference there in terms of that. For us, I think that would have had a different meaning than other parents in bonding. I think for us, bonding was like, oh, you're like almost toddler stage, right? You're playing and you're starting to run around and walk and use words and all that. So, which just our personalities, I think that resonated really well with us. So I think that's part of why it was a good fit. So we just,
yeah, it really was like, you guys really fell into that in such an amazing way. You know, and to say that, because I remember when we were all going through the domestic infant, I mean, I was very much like, I'm not emotionally capable of doing foster right now. And we were kind of all on the same page, but this situation popped up that was so unique. So like, and just fell into yeah. your lap. And really, like, how many, there were probably 30 or 40 families that were interested in the situation.
There was 33 families. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah did the Sarah thing and called the person in charge. You did that, right?
I did.
You called the person in charge and said, I think we would be a good fit. You should really consider us. I'm a therapist and my husband's a pastor and I don't usually throw those terms around, but this is my child. Did you not say that?
I did. No, you know, we didn't know what to expect, but we certainly were like, hey, what kind of family are you looking for? Who do you think would be a good fit? Are we it? You know, and they were, we could tell right away, like they were very interested. So we sort of knew from the get-go where it was headed. But no, right. I mean, like when you're talking about it happened so quick, so to speak, like I think Justin and I always reflect on, I mean, we were married for over 12 years before Kaysen entered, you know, children entered our world. So it looked very different. We were very used to who we, like the way we operated, right? We've been together for a long time. And so it was definitely a big shift. But I think we were, since we were in our mid-30s at that time, like, we were ready to take on, you know, that change and prepared for it mentally, financially, emotionally, you know, even physically. Mm-hmm. The only thing I say is that had a one-year-old come into our life when I was in my 20s rather than 30s, like I might have had a little more energy. But aside from that, maturity-wise, like we were solid and prepared for that.
A little more energy, a little less wisdom. Okay. Yeah. There are trade-offs.
I'm always like, I feel kind of a little bit older in my 40s now with an almost 10-year-old. So, but I also think that comes with a lot of perks, and I don't know that I would have changed any of it. But yeah, it definitely was a certain setup. You know what I mean? Like the way it felt was we were a little bit older. We had been together a little bit longer. He was a little bit older, you know, when he comes into our life. So the pieces just sort of came together in that regard, I'd say.
Yeah. And honestly, like you guys look like such a matched family. Like it's really, he is your child.
He looks a lot like my husband.
He looks like your husband. He acts like you. He likes his lattes, you know?
It's true.
He was meant to be an only child with the Spurlock family. And I just laugh every time I see him because it's just so funny how he landed in the most perfect position. And I'm sure that you guys don't have the best, everything's not hunky-dory 100% of the time. I know you've had struggles, but just looking from the outside, looking in, like he belongs in that family and you guys would have been so boring without him.
It's true. He definitely keeps things active and keeps us on our toes. No, and it is fun watching him. Like, well, I always say like, Nicholas, he likes all the things like that you guys like, right? Like he likes the bike rides and being on the ranch and like the outdoor, and we're opposite of that. And Kaysen loves all that stuff. Like we're like city people and foodies and try restaurants and like all this kind of stuff. And he's like totally into that, like
he, you know. And I wonder, is that just an environmental thing, or is that something that kind of played out? I know that when we were placed with Nicholas, his birth mom picked us because of our book, which showed that we liked the outdoors. My parents have a ranch, we went skiing, and she said yes, that's the family I want him to be with. You didn't get that opportunity where nobody really picked you.
Yeah,
it was the state that was involved, and it just worked the way it worked.
Yeah. It is kind of funny because I remember like when he was super little, like thinking like, what if he wants to do all these things, or like, what if his personality is nothing like ours and he wants to do all these things we have no interest in? Like, how's it gonna fit? And
you haven't had to worry about that.
Yeah, we haven't.
No. Yeah. He was a Spurlock through and through.
And then when you were saying earlier, I was laughing, you're like, you just like advocate and you don't take no for an answer. So literally earlier today, I'm trying to get a service, like a medical service for him that's not covered by Medicaid. So I was like on the phone calling people and I was acting like I was the provider. And
yeah, you were. I'm his therapist and his mother. So listen here. How this is going to work. Let me help you out with that.
But when a child's on Medicaid, you need a Medicaid provider, right? Well, then a lot of times their services, well, they'll do a single case agreement, essentially, that are, you know, like they will cover it, but you have to get approval because it's not available otherwise. And so I was like, okay, how do we get this approved through Medicaid? And I had to act for a minute like I was the provider, but I got the answers that I needed and it was fine.
And this is why she's a bulldog and she gets things done. And also she's only like 4'9". So,
I mean, maybe 5'5".
Okay, I'll give you 5 foot. She's scary. And this is how all mothers should be. This is what makes a mother. Like, you are willing to fight for your people, whether they're your children or your, you know, family or your neighbors or your community, you're willing to fight. And that's, I think that's what makes a mother, is your willingness to fight for your people.
Well, and in this scenario, this is good information for anyone else. A lot of times children in these circumstances need IEPs at school, right? So like, that's another example of how I've had to like really advocate for him and get all the information, you know, to get him the resources he needs. And he ended up qualifying for a 504 plan and an advanced learning plan. But like, you know, you hit that spot when your child has certain needs and you're like, how do I navigate this? No one's there to walk me through it. And I had to like bulldoze my way through that. And I mean, a lot of it wasn't just bulldozing either. It was just, you have to learn. Like, I just had to learn and get all the information, like I was saying, and then go from there. But that is another example of a process where it's like, you just dive right in and then be mama bear. And
well, you have to ask every question and you have to know that there are no stupid questions, because I need to know the answer to this.
Yeah.
And if it hasn't fully been explained to me, I'm going to ask you again, because you're not giving me the full answer here. Yeah. And I think that's something you're so good at, is asking the right questions and asking them again to get the right answer that you need to get.
Yeah. And on the call this morning, when I was pretending to not really, I'm like, yeah, I'm the provider. Hit number two, whatever.
You just hit the button, folks. Okay. She didn't lie in the court of law.
The guy on the phone was super helpful. And he was like, he appreciated, because I said, I'm his mother. I'm just trying to like figure out what the process is, you know? And he was like really affirming of, hey, yeah, you're just trying to get these answers, and like, good for you for being his mom and like doing. So, I mean, it was, I'm joking, but like, it all went really positive. And that is an example of, even in that scenario, you know, they were affirming, like, yeah, you're just asking the questions. No, there's no stupid question. You just got to advocate for your kid and figure out what you need to do.
And I think so, like, for me, I would be terrified to push that button. Like, to push the, all you did was push the button that said you were a provider. I would be like, oh my God, they'll know. The second I call up, they'll be like, ma'am, you are just a mother and you need to get off the phone right now. And this is unacceptable. And you were like, yeah, listen, I'm his mom and I want some answers. And they're like, yes, ma'am. And I can't, there's no reason why I can't do that. Just push the button. You
know? Yeah.
That's your advice, folks. Push the damn button.
I would, it's true.
Why is it so hard for Medicare kids to find these resources and information? Is it, what have you learned from all of
it? It's a very complicated system to navigate. So I just think you, in a lot of times in a situation like that, you do need like a case manager. So I will, and for any parents out there who have adopted through the state, it was almost 9 years ago. I still am in contact with the adoption liaison through the state, you know? So I view them kind of as a case manager, you know, essentially for him, and I will reach out to them, and still, you kind of have to have someone to help you walk through it. So making a friend like that and having a point person to go to is really helpful too. And you just keep going back and asking the questions again. Like I said, there's no stupid question.
Right. And I think what you've done well is you've said, I'm not the expert here, and I'm going to find the expert, and I'm going to ask the questions, and just being the parent that's willing to learn more. And I think so many parents put it upon themselves to know all the answers, and then they're struggling, and then it's really hard, and they get to a point where it's too hard to ask for help. And I guess what you know, what you and I, our conversation is trying to tell other families is ask for help now. Even if it's a stupid question, call, push the button and ask for help and ask, who do I call? Who is the right person? How do I get this service? I know I qualify for it, but I have to find this provider that's within this insurance, that's within, who do I call? Just give me the one person that I need to call and I'll do it, you know?
And that's where, I mean, my husband would say, like, the difference between him and I is he would go, well, they told me no, so I didn't know what to do now, or like that stopped the process there, you know? And I'm like, no, okay, here's the next handful of questions. And like, here's where you, because at the end of the day, this is what needs to happen, right? Like the child, I mean, using the school as an example, the child needs these resources, right? And so it's not just a no, but it's okay, is there more than one way to skin a cat? Like what's a route to get us there? Thinking outside of the box, so to speak. And it really also is when we chose which school for Kaysen to go to, right? Like we did all of our research the same there, asked all the questions, and it was a very purposeful, like, this is a fit for him. Like, and to this day, I still don't ever picture him being in your traditional neighborhood public school. He's not in a private school, but he's in a charter school, but Montessori style was what fit best for him. But we did our research, you know, and again, every kid's different. But we advocate, like, we knew, like, there was no way we weren't going to get into that school. We were going to do whatever we had to do. Right. Because that was clearly the best option for him, you know, through our research. And it has turned out to be a great fit and worth it.
And you also have built a relationship with the administration of that school. Like, that's what had to do is, okay, you're the principal. Let's talk about this.
And I know you, Sheila's saying I'm scary, but they like me.
They let you stay. So that's all that matters.
They know me. They know me because I'm their friend. Don't worry. I'm not. But yes, I built a relationship with. Well, Kaysen makes himself known too. So
yeah, he's not quiet.
As part of it. Yeah.
So what is your plan for middle school? How are you going to approach that?
So that was part of why we chose this school, is it goes through middle school. So we purposely wanted a school that went all the way through middle school and had the least amount of transitions. Mm-hmm. So in Montessori, you're in one school or one classroom for 3 years. So you're not only like not just moving schools all the time, but like you're not even moving classrooms all the time. He probably, from kindergarten through eighth grade, will end up only having 4 different, if that, and that maybe 3 different teachers.
Okay.
So that keeps it like that teacher gets to know him. He's with the same kids and it feels extremely secure for him. I think high school is obviously where it'll get interesting, but I think we know at the end of the day, he will not, I think the picture of which high school he goes to is going to be really different. Like it's not going to be your traditional public school. I just don't picture him thriving in that environment. So we'll see what happens.
Right. And it's not like you're throwing him to the wolves either. You're like, what's going to help you succeed the most in this time of your life? Not what's going to turn you into a doctor someday. What's going to turn you into this someday? What is going to help you succeed so that you are a fully developed emotionally, physically, intellectually human being? That's what our focus is right now. Not.
Oh yeah. His academics are so easy. Like, honestly, we've never worried, which going through COVID and remote learning, we actually didn't realize how bright he was until he was home doing remote learning. We were like, oh, we need to like figure this out, you know, and did a bunch of testing, educational and psychological testing, and figured, you know, learned a bunch of stuff from that. But we've never had to worry about academics. It's always been what environment socially and emotionally is going to be best for him. He wants to be a chef as of right now. He wants to own a hotel and be a chef. So he has the mind of an engineer though. So he may be one of the brightest hotel owners and chefs out there.
Yeah, I would hire him right now to be my chef. And he would just send me to all the expensive restaurants and grocery stores. I know how this
works. Yeah. Yeah. He's going to know all the like ins and outs of like how the molecular way food works. You know, like he's going to know the science.
He's going to create new food. Probably solve world hunger.
It's fine.
He's got too much knowledge. There's too much going on in there. His brain's always trucking. I see it.
Oh yeah. He's very much an observer. Like he will sit back and just take it all in. And he is always putting pieces together. He does have the mind of an engineer. He likes to create and build. So he's an interesting mix of, he can be very creative in that regard, but math is his strongest suit. And so it's very mathematical, like that creative process.
Yeah. So. No, that's interesting. It's really cool to watch you guys raise him. And it's really been fun to get to know him a little bit more. Like we didn't really connect in the beginning. And now it seems like every time I see him, like it's really fun to be able to connect with him. Cause I feel like it was hard. He's a hard kid to connect with as an adult.
Yeah.
But once you get there, man, you get there and it's so cool. It's such a cool thing to see him and to be able to.
Oh yeah. Once you're in his group, once you're his person, then you're his person.
Yeah. What is your advice for parents who are dealing with kids with special needs or that are new to the special needs world? And
I would say being okay with your kid being different or things looking different than like what's typical. A lot of times we have boxes where we think this is what is quote unquote normal. Like this is what kids do. And we know certain things that Kaysen responds well to and needs and does that will make life go much smoother than if we are trying to, it has to be in this box, you know, we have to do it this way. So there'll be certain things that we're like, yeah, that's just not going to go well. Like we wouldn't do that. And then other things that may go better than what your typical scenario is. And well, like he's a foodie. You can sit and have dinner with him at a 5-star restaurant and he'll appreciate that. Whereas, you know, you might not be taking your average kid to those restaurants, right? Like, so that scenario would go much better, but he is not a huge group person. He likes one-on-one attention. So if it's a scenario where we know he's going to feel on the outskirts, not get some individualized attention or be forced to participate in a group and not get to observe. Because a lot of times when he does dive into the group, he's the leader then. But like it's kind of one or the other. you know, you're just attending to those things of what scenarios you know are going to work well and what they need. Like he watches very like next to zero TV at home. Like he doesn't even, I mean, movies, TV shows, like that kind of stuff, like doesn't keep his attention. He's not that, but we will let him do that in a scenario where we know he doesn't want to be so like, he just needs to check out and he doesn't want to be social. So it might be a restaurant or a group setting. We'll let him do that. But at home, he doesn't need that. So we kind of just adjust, like knowing what's going to work for him and not just having those rules, right? Well, this is the way it, like, we say it should be, right? Like, and same thing at school, you know, like he may not be the kid that's just playing kickball with 15 other kids on the playground, right? But he will be the kid that's like helping the teacher on his own clean up the classroom because he loves to like be the teacher's helper and he likes to clean. You know, other kids don't like to clean. Like, you know what I mean? And being able to accommodate what works for him and advocate for that too, to go, hey, teacher, you're going to have a really good day if you let him be the teacher's helper and he'll help you clean the room. If you force him to play kickball with the other 15 kids, it might not go great. So,
right. And I think a lot of parents will do that. Like, why aren't you playing with the other kids? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? When what fills this kid's cup right now is being with the teacher. What fills this kid's cup right now is being with one-on-one, maybe with one other student. If the teacher can't accommodate that, then what, let's find a buddy. Who's your buddy? Like, it, and teach your kid. Let's find, who's your person for today? Let's try to find that safe child that you can, you know.
And if he feels secure, he will, again, take the lead, but it might be, because a lot of, one example may be in Montessori, they're very big on like kids being independent. Like they don't like, they actually don't really love when parents are like intervening and like speaking for their child. Like if your child needs something, they need to use their voice and they need to advocate for themselves. That looks a little different for us because a lot of times we will open that door and tell the teacher how to guide him. But then once he's there, right? Once it's like that, he feels secure in that footing, then he'll take the lead. He'll totally like jump into the group project or whatever. But he's not necessarily going to be the kid to walk up and say, hey, I really want to do this. Can I do that? Like we might have to say for him. And then once the teacher or whoever's in charge of whatever activity, you know, the adult in charge knows what direction to take him in, it goes, he dives right in. But you just kind of have to know. I think a lot of it is knowing what your kid responds to and being okay with that looking a little bit different. Like you were talking about nails. Like he loves to paint his fingernails because he just loves bright colors in general. Like he's the kid with like tie-dye shirts and like painted fingernails and, you know, being okay with that and everyone saying like having fun. I mean, he's known for it now. It's kind of like what makes him unique. And he likes that, that people know that about him. And I've always said to him, the minute you don't want to do something or like, let's say people did pick on you for being a 9-year-old boy who painted your fingernails, 100% your choice. If you don't want to do it anymore, you don't do it anymore. If you want to do it, do whatever you want, what you're comfortable. And he has been, I've loved it. Cause I'm like, I thought, oh, you know, once he starts to hit this age, like he might bow out because he doesn't want people to think he's different or to comment. Or, and I don't think anyone has really been that hard on him or bullied him by any stretch, but like just comments, you know, like if it gets too, he goes with it. He said other kids have come to his, like if someone says, well, why do you paint your nails? Girls paint their nails. He said all the other girls on the playground will be like, leave him alone. He can do what he wants. And like, he loves it. He's like, yeah, they come to my aid. So giving him that ability to like make those choices and be him. And I think that that's totally fine. I mean, he's sat in the nail salon where there's been another little boy who was 5 years old and wanted to paint his nails and the parent said no. And he was confused. Why is that parent saying no? Why have I always been allowed to do this? And being able to talk through that, like that's just one example of, it's always a process, I think, with him of explaining, because he is bright and he can't understand it all. You have to kind of explain to him like, so this is how society works. This is the way things often look. Here's your choices. I mean, his father is a pastor, like even with religion, we're going, this is what we believe. This is how we operate in church and worship in church. And this is what other people believe and what they do. And like, he can wrap his mind around that and know like, these are his choices, you know. And he, because we've given him that autonomy, he fully challenges us on if he doesn't agree with something. Like he challenges Justin all the time on religion, which is really entertaining. But you know, like I think part of that, I think, is that autonomy and knowing they have the choice to be different or not, and that it doesn't have to look a certain way, and that that's okay.
You know, one benefit that you guys have is that you live in the city. And you get to kind of pick and choose. And, you know, how would you do things differently if he wasn't a public school and you had to fight a little bit harder? I mean, I guess you would just be in the office a little bit more often.
Well, I feel like we've talked about when you were talking about high school earlier, I feel like we actually, because we're in the suburbs and I picture we would maybe even move into the city so that it is more diverse. And there are some different options, right? Like he loves the city too. So I think his dream right now is we will live in some like high-rise condo in the city and he'll go to this like eccentric school that he's dreamed up and imagined in his mind that exists in the city, but like, you know, like something different. And that, again, is not rather mainstream. I think we somehow have instilled that in him that, you know, you can be whatever, whoever, however, and it will be accepted. And I think now he kind of like looking for what's not mainstream.
Like, how can I push this? How can I push this?
Yeah. It's different. Yeah. You know, it's differentiating between being the things we challenge him on, since he is very strong-willed, are being a good human being. Like, here's where the deal breakers are, right? Like, we want to teach you how to be a kind, empathetic human being. And that's the only stuff we really push back on him, where it's like, no, this is a requirement of what our values are and how we operate in our family. The rest, you know, right, everything else is totally be who you want to be, you know, but as long as your character at the end of the day, that's what we're gonna try to instill and push back on and say is important. But outside of that, do you.
You know, I think when you look at it, when I look at all the people that I've interviewed so far, which is not a ton, but I know a lot of people. And I think at the end of the day, all of us just want a kid that's kind to themselves and to other people. Yeah. And to me, like, that's kind of what this whole podcast is about, is that we're all very different people and we all want our kids to be good human beings. Like, that's the goal, is to, you know, let's start with being a good person. And then if you have these sub values, those might be a little bit different, but yeah. I think everybody, we just want our kids to be good human beings and to go out there.
We have lots of, I mean, as we were kind of saying earlier about how I kind of operate, I'm not one to like mince words. Like, I will speak the truth to my child. I know he can understand it and wrap his mind around it, but like, I've never been one to not be honest with him or like, you know, rose colored glasses, everything. Like, he's like, someone was mean to me on the playground because I didn't want to play their game. And I'm like, yeah, people don't like it if you don't want to play their game. Or like, if you do that to them, they're going to do it back to you. Like, and here's how we just, everyday scenarios like that, we try to walk him through. Here's how you treat others. Here is how others are going to respond to you, you know? And everything's a choice, you know, like trying to help him make those good choices and recognize that when you don't always make the good, that could be food. You know what I mean? Like, you can eat that cookie, but here's what to know about that cookie, right? Like, there's
sugar. If you eat 10 of them, this is what's going to happen.
And then right. Like, helping them to make those choices, you know, or you can make this choice to eat the vegetable and here's what that looks like, and trying to create, just being honest with him about what, that he has those choices and what those mean, for good and bad, you know, there's going to be pros to things and there's going to be consequences to things as well, you know, and walking him through that and not like, what's the word, you know, sugarcoating it or protecting him right. From all that.
Yeah. That's definitely something I've learned from you. And I guess just having permission to be as honest as possible with my kids. I've learned, like, well, Sarah does it. It'll be fine. So through all of the stuff that you do, so let me just talk about you and your husband. Like, you guys both work all the time.
True. We do.
How many hours a week do you think you're in?
I would say I probably work an average of 60, 70 hours a week.
What do you think Justin works?
Not as much as me, but don't tell him that. No, I'm just kidding. we're both always on the clock because of the nature of our jobs, right? Like, so I always say we work hard, we play hard. Like, we know how to like engage and focus on something, like, okay, this is what's going on right now. And we're like in it, you know, fully invested in that moment. And then it's like shifting gears over here. Like, most of my day will look like I wake up in the morning, it's getting Kason off to school. Then it's, I'm at work all day. Then it's, if we pick him up from school, then I'm back on, you know, mom duty, Kason duty. Like, it's somewhat compartmentalized, but never a dull moment that's off. Like, we're just constantly, right. It's like balls in the air juggling, right? And there's perks to that, again, and that we're always kind of on call with the nature of our job, because we can sort of make our own schedule. So that's definitely and manage it all. That definitely is a perk. But there's not a lot of times where I would say either of us are just like, nothing's going on. Like, we're off. Right. Like, I can't think of when that truly exists very often.
Because if you're like, I noticed we have an hour of free time next Friday, what should we do? Let's go do something. Yeah. You're always going and moving. How do you guys maintain your relationship? Where do you find time for the marriage?
Again, it probably looks a little non-traditional. So one example is I work Saturdays, Justin works Sundays because of church. So Fridays, a lot of time, are days off. So we'll spend time together while Kason's at school. You know, he doesn't do great with babysitters, especially. I mean, if it was someone he's known for a long time, regularly been with him, he'd probably do pretty well. But like, so it's not like hey, let's just find some neighborhood kid, you know, teenager to watch him on a Friday night so we can have a date night. You have to kind of plan in advance, and we have him in structured activities as opposed to like a babysitter. So like he almost every day he will have a after school activity. That's like yoga, a cooking class. This is part, we have an ongoing joke. Part of why we work a lot is because Kason's needs honestly are kind of expensive. And so we know he does much better if he has those structured activities. Like, a lot of people might go, why is he doing all that stuff? Or like, why are they paying for that or whatever? And we're like, because that's how he thrives. And it's a good setup for our family where we can also do something, the two of us, or manage our time. So it's very like structured, so to speak. And it probably looks a little more non-traditional than other families. Like, our date would be like brunch on Friday, not like a Saturday night often, you know?
Right. Right. And we know that when we're like, we got to go out to the Spurlocks, they're available until 8 p.m. We have to drive to them because they don't have a sitter and we do. So this is what we got to do to make it work.
We're a little high maintenance. It's fine.
It's fine. But at least you always pick the place to eat and it's delicious. And that's all that matters.
There will be good food.
There will be good food. There will be good conversation.
Entertaining humor. That's what you know. You're like, how do you? We are definitely humorous. Like, in case it has a great sense of humor too. Like, just
oh
like,
yeah. Yeah, dry, very
yeah.
dry.
Yeah,
he's my kid. That's where we connect.
Yeah, like, you got to keep it light. I mean, we work hard, play hard. That's how I put it.
And that's the truth. I mean, you guys do. I love that you do local vacations. You do staycations.
Yeah,
you'll stay at hotels downtown Denver as part of your vacation. Sometimes you'll do small trips as a family here and there. And, you know, I've definitely taken a note from your book of, if we need a vacation, let's just stay at a hotel downtown. Luckily, we have family to watch the kids, because I'm not taking three kids with me. Like, that's not happening. And as I get a little older and I see all my friends that just stuck with the one child, I'm like, oh, I see how they just have the one child to schedule. But I mean, Kason is in a lot of things, and you know, I often am like, oh my God, how do they do that? And it's because you have one child and you both work, you know, 60 hours a week. And, you know, I like that.
And also, tip for everyone, shared calendar. I tell so many, even of my clients, I'm like, you have to have a calendar that both of you can see where you have everything on there. So like,
yeah.
And oftentimes, which I don't know that I fully realized the extent of it until when my parents moved here, and they're like watching us, like every hour is different. Like, 1 hour, I mean, just in the however many hours, the beginning of today, like it was taking kiddo to school, then taking the cat to the cat groomer, then it was calling doctors, then it was doing a work meeting, now it's doing a podcast. After right. this, it'll be like every hour literally looks different. So you have to kind of like have that on the calendar and planned out. Otherwise things get confusing. It's true.
Right. Like, you know, and I've noticed I'll call Justin at 4 o'clock and he's like, yeah, I'm picking up Kaysen right now. I just text it to me or this or that. Or I'll text him on a Friday and he's like, well, we're at the bar. And I'm like, it's 10 a.m., but whatever, dude. I forget that's your day off. Like, that's the day I work.
Yeah. Yes, it's very true. Friday's our fun day.
It's like, okay, don't text Justin on a Friday. But I still have to text him or I'm going to forget to text
him. And also, I mean, our kid, sleep is essential for him. So like at 8 o'clock, we're normally heading to like the latest. It's very rare that we are not home by like 8 and in bed by 8:30 for kiddo and then usher.
And then he sleeps 12 hours minimum, yes. Doesn't he?
Yeah, he requires, it doesn't go well if he doesn't get his good night's beauty rest. So we plan again accordingly. We're not, the other families might be able to like, oh, we're just gonna do this for the moment, or like mm-hmm. we'll stay out late because of this or that. Like it has to be planned in advance, and we do have our fun during the day. There's not a lot of late nights for
us. My kind of family.
That's true. We also do a lot of things separate, honestly. I mean, Kaysen does his one-on-one time with Justin, gets one-on-one time with me. Justin can go do his thing when he needs. I can go do my thing when I need. And then we try to balance it out. You know, time the two of us, time the three of us together as a family. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of one-on-one time with him where that way each of us are getting our needs met too and doing the things yeah. we need to do.
So last words, yeah. I would like to know, what grace can you give yourself?
Here's the thing I would say that's interesting is I am very A-type, you know, as we've talked about, and so almost comically so, but like I have high expectations for myself, obviously. And I was one, the older I get, I can't say this as easily as I used to be able to, but I'm a pretty high energy person. Like I'm one with a lot of energy and taskmaster, like to keep going. Parenting is the one thing where I reach my limit. Like I realize like I am not superwoman. Like I, and for me, because I'm constantly go, 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 it was realizing my physical limitation. Like I was like, I'm exhausted and I don't know what that feels like what's happening here, you know? So giving myself the grace to go, you do have limits. Like there's going to be time to take care of yourself. And honestly, COVID was a whole part of that too. I was like, I turned 40 at the start of COVID, and like, so in my 40s, and then with everything going on, I did get COVID in 2020. Like, I learned my physical limitations and I had to show myself grace of like, it's okay. Probably didn't even do that perfectly, but definitely much more aware now of like, I have to know where those limits are and take care of myself. Like before, I mean, to be honest, I would teach my clients, I would encourage everyone else self-care. I don't know that I was 100% practicing. It's not like I was opposed to it, but I honestly didn't feel the need for it. Literally. Like I was like, I was doing okay. Right. You learn those limits and it's like, no, there's a need for this now. And giving myself grace to allow for that is probably the biggest thing.
Hey, thanks for listening to my conversation with my friend Sarah. You can find out more about Sarah in my show notes. There you will also find the resource links we had mentioned in our conversation. And just a reminder that me and my guests are not parenting experts. We are just doing the best we can with the information we have. And as always, give yourself and others a little more grace today.